Welcome this afternoon to the Second Court of Appeals. And we'll get started pretty fast here and try to get through. I'll ask the clerk to call the case.
The court will now call, in the interest of WGO Third, a minor child, may please the court, Ms. Teresa M. Robbins will argue for the appellant, Ms. Patricia Baca will argue for the appellate.
Okay. Ms. Robbins, are you ready to begin?
Yes, ma'am.
Come forward.
I'm honored to represent Robin Mashiah, the appellant before this court. We come today complaining about the trial court's jurisdiction and matters that occurred at trial. Jurisdiction of a court is not to be taken lightly. It speaks to the court's power rather than the party's rights or obligations. It cannot be waived. Jurisdiction can't be the subject of agreement. It can't be conferred or found through a docket entry or a judge's memoranda. In this case, the rules of civil procedure were not followed as to the time to grant a motion for new trial. Yes, ma'am.
I think maybe we can cut to the chase that we understand the procedure that happened and the Supreme Court's decision in a later case out of the same court that a docket entry or a scheduling order does not constitute a written order for new trial, so that your position is that the 2007 judgment was final.
Yes, ma'am.
Was not final.
September 2007 decree became final when the trial court did not sign a written order granting a new trial within the plenary power under Rule 329B.
Okay, my question is, we're here on an appeal from the December 17th, 2010 final order of modification in the suit affecting parent-child relationship. So the trial court clearly had jurisdiction to enter that order.
That's correct, Your Honor, but the trial court did not entertain or make a ruling on our request for a declaratory judgment as to what was the final order of the court. And so we were forced to go to trial on apparently the November 2009 order, which we maintain was void for want of jurisdiction, as well as not being a final order of the court.
My point is that even if that's correct, even if all that is true, the trial court had jurisdiction to enter the order that it entered, and I don't see any way that it would have differed whether the trial court was modifying the 2007 order's final judgment's terms or the 2009 final judgment's terms. The trial court still had authority to enter the order it entered, modifying whatever it modified, either the 2007 judgment or the 2009 judgment. And the terms, I'm not seeing how the terms that the trial court made in the 2010 modification order would have been different. He could have made the exact same 2010 order regardless of which judgment was the final judgment, the 2007 or the 2009.
The 2009 order was not susceptible of modification because it did not contain any decrees concerning the relationships of the party, conservatorship of the parties, possession, access, child support, and the modification was sought by Mr. Osborne. And we simply sought an enforcement of the 07 decree, which did contain all of those provisions. The modification that was sought was declared at the trial that it was for the November 2009 order, not the September 2007 order. The November 2009 order was void. It was void ab initio. It wasn't valid at the time of the trial. We also had a motion for enforcement pending, and under a motion for enforcement, you're not entitled to a jury. Under a motion for modification, apparently we were changing conservatorship. Apparently we were changing the right to designate the child's residence, and we were not given notice of that until the day of the trial. So at the day of the trial is when we discovered that now we were going forward on a motion to modify a November 2009 decree, which was incomplete, and we were denied a trial, a jury trial. The trial court at the trial in November 2010 precluded us from entering any evidence after November 30 of 2009. So if there was any relevant evidence before that period in time, assuming the 07 order was the valid order, we were not even able to present evidence which might have been material. I believe the trial court erred in not making the declaration early so that we could ascertain from that moment what was our next step. And we did ask for it early by a motion for summary judgment. I'm not sure I answered your question. I believe that the original terms of the 2007 decree permitted Ms. Mashaya, who had the right to designate the child's residence, to move to Oklahoma if Mr. Osborne was delinquent in his child support payments. So an enforcement action is different than a modification action, and we would have had a different result if we were on enforcing the 07 decree.
I can read on page 29 of your brief what you say you're asking me, but why don't you tell me what relief you're seeking?
We would like the declaration as to the validity of the 07 decree by
declaratory judgment?
Yes, yes, sir. I believe that this court can make that determination as a matter of law. There was no opposition to the summary judgment, and a court's jurisdiction can be determined as a matter of law. So if this court renders the judgment that we ask, then there should be a remand, I suppose, to permit us to do the motion for enforcement and have a trial as we requested, as well as a limited issue of attorney fees under the DEC Act. If we are wrong, then the trial court never filed findings of fact and conclusions of law, which we asked for a number of times. So if we are wrong, we have no basis to understand why the trial court decided the November 2009 order was the valid order and why we went forward on that.
Are you saying you were entitled to findings of fact and conclusions of law from the final order of modification?
Yes, ma'am. At least it would enable us to ascertain the reasoning behind the court's decision that the November 2009 was the order which was before it to be modified and either take it up on appeal or take a mandamus. And if we're wrong, then we would require some sort of guidance, perhaps abating the appeal and giving us time to, again, take it on appeal or to reverse and grant a new trial on the modification so that we can have a jury, if that's what we're going to be doing in the modification.
Thank you.
Really?
You have.
The respondent argues that the appellee argues that somehow the 2007 order was never final because there was an intervention, and our objection would be to materials that are not in the record. They weren't tried at the trial court, and the alleged intervener, was not a party at trial, was not a party to the appeal. In any event, it was waived if they didn't pursue their claims. The intervener had no claims before the court on modification or for enforcement. And the claim that this was a series of interlocutory orders, I quite don't understand how they can say that to be so. The 2007 decree existed until it didn't, I suppose, and so there was no interlocutory orders. They claim that jurisdiction was extended by the trial courts signing temporary orders, But when the final orders are final after 105 days, temporary orders are gone, interveners' claims are gone, and we are just asking for the opportunity to enforce the decree that we agreed to and that the judge signed as final. Can I reserve some time?
Sure. How much time did she have left? Okay. 5 minutes. 3 minutes and 5 minutes? Oh, okay. 5 minutes.
Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Bacco, you ready to proceed?
Good afternoon. I'm Patricia Bacco. I represent the appellee, Gary Wayne Osborne, in this case. I thank you.
Let me start you out with, I would kind of like to know where you want us to go and then let you tell us how you expect to get there.
Okay.
So let me ask you, what relief are you seeking? I mean, I can read on the last page of brief. You tell us.
All right. Basically, what I'd like you to do is, if you find the 2007 order to be interlocutory, which I believe it is, that you remand it to the trial court to enter one order consistent with his current rulings, or in the alternative, if you find the modification to be valid, to simply uphold the order of the trial court as a valid modification and affirm. And either one of those would satisfy the appellee.
All right. Thank you.
Now, legally, I think we are in the position where the 2007 order is clearly interlocutory. In order to have waived any of his rights, the intervener would have had to have been noticed of trial and not shown up. There's no evidence of the record in that. He couldn't have made an appearance in the record because he wasn't noticed of trial. He wasn't a party to trial. He was just ignored from the time he filed his intervention on. And so we've got that point. I want to briefly respond to two things she said that were not in the record or not in her argument. She said evidence was precluded between 2007 and 2009. There is no evidence in the record that she tried to bring any evidence that would have been between from the 2007 and 2009 hearing that was excluded and that she objected to. So I believe Justice Walker's point that whether it was a 2007 modification or a 2009 modification is irrelevant. And so I just wanted to point that out.
Well, that's one of my questions is that, you know, to find if we're going to find reversible error, we have to find that the error probably caused the rendition of an improper judgment. And so here, the quote judgment being appealed is the final modification order. And nothing, whether it's the 2007 judgment or the 2009 judgment, I'm not seeing any of that moving forward to cause what is actually before us, the appeal from the order of modification. I'm not seeing any challenges from anybody that the modification order is in any respect improper.
That's correct. The court clearly had jurisdiction to do a modification. That's absolutely no doubt. And I do not recall any place in the record where there was evidence between 2007 and 2009 that was excluded. And in order to find reversible error, she would have had to have presented evidence, and somebody would have had to have stopped her from presenting that evidence. And as so, I see no harm if, in fact, he really should have modified the 2007 order instead of the 2009 order to the respondent or to the mother in that regard.
And to the extent that one of those judgments is the final judgment, and if it is the 2009 judgment, and to the extent that it may have issues that are unaddressed, I'm not seeing that as being part of this appeal from the modification order. There are other remedies available, are there not?
Yes.
To clarify uncertain terms that are left out or omitted from prior judgments?
That is correct.
Okay.
So there really is, we do not have a problem with you upholding it as a modification. I felt a need to point out procedurally that we may still not have a final valid order as I was going through the record and I discovered the intervention that apparently everyone had forgotten about, but it certainly wasn't waived. There's still pleadings there.
So is it still outstanding?
It's still outstanding. They severed out, Ronald Hendricks filed an intervention individually and as a representative for Bailey, Galyon, and Gold. Okay. They severed out the Bailey, Galyon, and Gold intervention, but they did not sever out Ronald Hendricks' intervention. and they didn't notice Ronald Hendricks or give him opportunity to be heard on the severance of the intervention. So he wasn't part of the severance, and he was very clear in his pleadings. He was filing him as an individual and as an agent for Bailey and Galyon. So his intervention was still out there, and I believe this court held in Nichols that when you have a pending intervention, and the Texas Supreme Court has also held, you still have an interlocutory order. The other issue is the first final decree of divorce divided personal effects. It didn't even say personal property, it said personal effects. These people had bank accounts, they had cars, they had retirements. None of that was divided, and so not all of the issues before the court were dealt with in the final decree of divorce, and those are our arguments that it's interlocutory. And if it's interlocutory, you never had a final order, and you never have a loss of plenary power. But again, even if it was interlocutory, we still go back to the modification. And there is no error that I can even see in the modification. Now, there's some complaints on the continuance, and quite frankly, the only complaint on the continuance that's on the record is the complaint that she could not bring a witness from Oklahoma who is a school teacher. But I believe that is also harmless error, because the only thing the school teacher was going to testify to was what the tribal curriculum was in the school in Oklahoma. But the mother testified about the school in Oklahoma. The father testified about the school in Oklahoma. Both of the parents testified as to the exposure to tribal customs, tribal language that the child was being exposed to. So I don't see how this one witness, which is her only complaint when she made her continuance on the record, to the actual trial occurring. And so, you know, whether or not she went forward that day, and this, the judge practically had heard all of the evidence. Judge Sinha had heard this on temporary orders as an associate judge. I believe he actually even heard some finals as an associate judge, if I remember correctly. He had heard this case over and over again over the years. And he had already made a determination that if mom moved back to Texas, she would have custody. But if she stayed in Oklahoma, dad would have custody. And for 2 years, mom stayed in Oklahoma. And it's very important to note that every agreed order that the mother signed in this case stated that it was in the best interest of the child that both parents have continuing contact with this child and that there be a domicile restriction. Now, there was an exception in the first decree that the father became delinquent on support, she could move, but delinquent on support is kind of hard to determine when you have Rule 11 agreements and you have temporary orders and you have the parties actually not following the orders as far as possession, because you'd have possession credits. From November 2007 until today, the child has never followed the 2007 final decree of divorce. So even if somehow it was the order of the court, it wasn't the reality of the parties. From November of 2007 until 2009, they did a week on, week off. And then the child started school and they had to do something about it. And ever since, I believe it was September of 2010, I'm getting a little bit confused, the father has had the child. And the child has lived with the father and the mother's had visitation and she's continued to live in Oklahoma. And the 2009 order made it clear. She could have had custody of the child, all she had to do was move back. And she didn't do that, so she doesn't have custody. And whether or not any other evidence would have been presented is kind of irrelevant in this case. So she...
I understand that it was not on the record as to her complaint about I'm here for one matter and we're about to try another matter.
I didn't see anything on the record about that. I don't recall anything being on the record about that. And I believe that he did call it for modification. I believe when he called it for trial, he called it for modification. And I don't remember her standing up and saying on the record, I'm only here on the enforcement. I don't want to be heard on the modification. The notice of trial was very generic. It just says this case is set for trial. And enforcements tend to be heard by associate judges. So I don't think that if it was just set for an enforcement, it would have been sent in front of Judge Sinha. It's my understanding that on the record, she knew she was going forward on an enforcement that day. And she did not stand up and say, Your Honor, I'm not prepared because I didn't know I was going for an enforcement. She said, I'm not prepared because I don't have a witness here.
Do you mean modification?
Modification, okay. Yes. I'm sorry. And she did not say, when he called it to trial for modification, she did not say, I want a jury. Can we please stop this so I can have a jury as I have demanded? And so we've got those issues. And then finally, we've got the findings of fact and conclusions of law. And on the findings of fact and conclusions of law, she filed her request and then filed an appeal, and this court denied it because there was not one of jurisdiction because a final order had not been entered. And you sent it back. And after it was sent back, I do not believe she renewed her request for findings of fact and conclusions of law after the first appeal was rejected. So I do not believe that there is a valid findings of fact and conclusion of law request for this appeal. Also, it would be harmless error because Judge Sinha is still on the bench. The remedy would be abatement. I'm not sure, I don't believe that it's timely for her to ask for an abatement at oral arguments. I believe at some point earlier in time she should have asked for an abatement. But it's Brooks versus Housing Authority supports a proposition that lack of finding and facts and conclusions of law is harmless error when you can send it back to the trial court and ask for findings of fact and conclusions of law.
But didn't she ask for that in her initial opening brief?
She did not ask for an abatement in her brief. She said that it should be reversed on those grounds. I pointed out in my brief that the remedy is abatement. Okay. And to my knowledge, she has never asked this court to abate it until she stood here today.
I have a procedural question. Are you entitled to findings of fact and conclusions of law from a modification order?
You know what? I'm not sure. I believe you are, but I'm not certain that you are. But I think the only reason that she wanted findings in fact and conclusion of law was not for the modification, but for the denial of her declaratory judgment action, as I believe what she argued here, and I may have misunderstood her, because she wanted to know what the basis for the denial of her declaratory judgment was. And from that standpoint, I'm not sure that that's relevant, because whether the declaratory action was granted or denied, the court still had jurisdiction to modify. Are there any further questions? Okay. I thank you for your time this afternoon.
All right, Ms. Robbins, do you have any rebuttal? Oh, you have another 5 minutes. You have another 5 minutes.
To answer one of the Your Honor's questions, on a modification, when the issue is conservatorship, the right to designate a child's residence, that's a right to a jury trial, whether it's on initial or final trial, as long as that's the issue. And it was tried to a bench trial, and under a bench trial, you are entitled to findings of fact and conclusions of law when there was no jury. So we did ask, not once, we asked the first time when our appeal was denied for being premature. And again, in November of 2011, we filed a request again and reminded the court on February 10, 2012 of the failure to file the findings of fact and conclusions of law. The first filing was premature, but the rules permit that, and the date is presumed to be the date that the final judgment was signed.
Object of your requested findings and conclusions was the basis for the modification?
Correct. The basis of the modification, since that's what the trial was about when we finally went forward. There were several reminders to the court and objections to going forward on that day without a jury. We filed and also to request an abatement either of the trial court or otherwise. The first time was in our motion for summary judgment. We requested a continuance if it was denied so we could seek appellate relief. Then we filed a motion for continuance and the only basis was not want of testimony. Our motion for continuance while it was filed just a few days before the trial court, actually, and this matter was set by the trial court. And in our motion for continuance, which was verified, among the reasons, which included an absent witness, was that we had no notice that they were going forward on a 2009 final order when we believed it was a 2007 decree that was the valid order, and that that we would have not had an opportunity to prepare for trial or to have a jury. We did pay the jury fee. We did not make a demand on time within 30 days before trial, mainly because we believed we were going forward on a motion for enforcement, in which a jury is not permitted. That's simply to enforce an order of the court. The declaration that we sought early in this refiling would have clarified the things we are now before the court asking about. We asked for a summary judgment and to clarify at that time what is the order of the court that we're going forward on. We were denied that, and despite insistence on the day of trial, the judge signed an order denying the motion for summary judgment. I believe that the judge could have facilitated the entire proceeding as the Declaratory Judgment Act permits a trial court to do, so that we can have efficient disposition of the parties and the claims, so that the parties know what they're going to trial on, that we can have a declaration of the rights and statuses of the parties and their legal relations and obligations. I don't believe the trial court had discretion to deny that request, whether it was earlier in the suit or at the trial. And in fact, when he was pushed, he declared that it was the November 2009 order, which was the valid order of the court. There was plenty of harm to Ms. Mashiach in that regard. It was on the day of trial. The suit hadn't even been filed for 3 months. We didn't have any discovery on the modification that was sought. And the trial court could have, mind you, I understand the trial court's discretion, but could have granted the continuous once it had made the declaration that we are now proceeding on a modification as opposed to the enforcement.
What discovery would you propose to have done that you were not aware of in the last several years, or could have certainly taken care of at that time, by that time?
Well, besides the conduct of the parties and their financial circumstances and what the child was doing from 2007 to the day of trial, perhaps a social study, since now conservatorship and the right to designate a residence was being challenged. The teacher that we sought, and by the way, I did speak with this teacher personally, I have personal knowledge as opposed to they claimed I could not, is actually a very acclaimed Choctaw teacher. She teaches children, and she teaches, and perhaps discovery from her would have been a better understanding for the trial court as to the reasons why we believe the child should be living in Oklahoma, as well as an impartial party that would describe the Choctaw Nation, the benefits that they have, the culture of the tribe, and reasons why this child may do better in Oklahoma than in Arlington or Bedford, sorry, is where he's living now. Other discovery would include child support, whether it was paid or not, whether it was required to be paid or not, and the amounts. So that's in modification. The circumstances of the parties and the children, the child, and it just wasn't adequately developed at that point in time. Whereas in enforcement, we have the order of the court, and we say this is the order. We just have to prove that either child support was paid or it wasn't paid in order to activate the provision that permits Ms. Mashiach to leave if Mr. Osborne hasn't paid child support. That's just some of the discovery that I thought would probably be helpful at a trial.
And if the 2007 judgment was the operative judgment, the final judgment, and you could prove that the father didn't pay child support, then her removal of the child to Oklahoma was okay. Right.
That was permitted and, by their order, right. Yes, ma'am.
And was that also the basis, was her taking the child and to Oklahoma the basis for changing the primary residence, the right to establish a primary residence?
Ms. Mashiach always had that right. It was just that the child's residence was restricted to Tarrant and contiguous counties. So if he didn't pay child support, then she would have the right to designate his residence in Oklahoma. And that's how the parties have been doing it. And because parties don't follow an order of the court, does it make that court order less valid or more valid? Parents are supposed to try to agree. So in essence, the parties have been dividing the time between Oklahoma and Texas. But Ms. Mashiach always had that right. It was her exclusive right. And it was an agreement between the parties. And it was a final decree. It was set out in a final decree of the court.
Was it her right based on the showing that the child support had not been paid?
Yes, sir.
Was there a requirement in the order to come to the court to demonstrate that to be a fact before one just left with the child to go to Oklahoma?
It said without a court order. It said without court order, without further court order. There was a notice requirement, 30 days notice to Mr. Osborne.
And was that done?
It was done, but not before the child was taken to Oklahoma. She was not absconding with the child, as alleged. And we would maintain that that notice provision is not a material provision, and if the court would make the decree that this 2007 decree is the valid order of the court, then what would remain to be tried in the trial court is whether or not he was behind on child support, whether or not the notice was given, whether or not it's a material provision of the decree. But that didn't occur. So there was a different final judgment entered at 2012 than what we sought relief on. 2010. The December 2010 final order completely changed the 2007 order of the court. And so,
but aren't you really trying to attack two judgments in this proceeding that is just from the order modifying? I mean, isn't it really a collateral attack on two prior judgments in this appeal, this direct appeal from an order of modification? That's the struggle that I'm having, is it seems like we're getting all wrapped up in these prior judgments in which there was no direct appeal from, and now we're trying to collaterally attack them in a direct appeal of a modification order. Go ahead, you can answer.
There was no direct appeal from the 2007 order because Mr. Osborne failed to follow through on his request for a motion for new trial. That was the valid order of the court. This is not a collateral attack on a November 2009 order because it was void. It was void from the moment it was signed. It was void. Everything that occurred from November 2009 until September 2010 was void because the trial court, while it retains exclusive jurisdiction over the child, did not have jurisdiction over the parties and the claims of the parties until Mr. Osborne filed his motion to modify some order, not clear what order he was trying to modify, and he would never clarify that. And when Ms. Mashiach filed her motion for enforcement, then the trial court attained jurisdiction over the two parties and their claims. Ms. Mashiach's claims included a claim for request for declaratory judgment, and that was never dealt with in the 2010 order at all, other than, I guess, just ignored. In open court, the judge did make that declaration. So it's not a collateral attack. It is trying to restore the proper order of the court, the September 2007 order, which was the final order, and having it enforced, not modified.
I have a question regarding that. Could you respond to the appellee's position that the 2007 order was not a final judgment because Mr. Hendricks the attorney's claim for attorney's fees was not ever acted on, disposed of.
There was an order of severance for claims for attorney fees. I'm not sure that Mr. Hendricks made a separate claim, although it is alleged that he did. The order for attorney fees was severed. It was supposed to be given a new cause number, and this was before the September 07 order was signed. So that claim was severed and out. It was not part of the final judgment, as well as the property division. If it didn't occur at the final judgment, it's waived unless there's a reason to come in again under Chapter 9. That didn't occur here. And at this point in time, it's 2012. There's no property to be divided. That was not an interlocutory order. Intervention is not a matter of right, and he was never ruled on to even properly be an intervener or getting relief. That particular intervener was not before the court in 2010. I would say he waived it. I think that the claims made were either severed and out of the divorce or waived, and property division is also waived.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am.
And we want to thank all of the attorneys and parties for their support and briefs, very good briefs and arguments. Thank you. Your case is submitted, and we'll stand adjourned for the day.
Thank you.